From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made just 24 hours ago on this program when Congressman Joe Morelli made some significant comments about a universal basic income, or a UBI. A UBI is generally a concept in which the government sends monthly checks to everyone or most people in the population. A popular idea is, say, $1,000 a month for every American, floated by former presidential candidate Andrew Yang. But there's different flavors of UBI. Some other countries are offering a UBI during the pandemic. The U.S. government has so far declined to follow that model, opting instead, so far, for a one-time cash payment of $1,200 for most Americans, along with other forms of assistance. But yesterday on Connections, Congressman Morelli said that maybe it's time to actually do this in the United States. It was a big shift for the congressman. He says he's open to new ideas and new information. Could a UBI be coming our way? Congress returns to work on pandemic relief later this month. This hour, our guests discuss the possible impact of a universal basic income. Pete Nabosny is the director of policy for the Children's Agenda. Congratulations, you don't just have fringe positions anymore, Pete.
Thanks so much, Evan.
Alex Turner is Community Resources Services Program Director at Catholic Family Center and Eviction Prevention Representative to the Homeless Services Network. Alex, welcome. Thanks for making time for the program.
Hey, Evan. It's great to be on.
Pete, I'm joking, but you know, in some sense here, the notion of a UBI was, just in terms of who knew about it and how serious it was, fringe when we started talking about it on this program. I don't think you can call it fringe anymore. I mean, some other countries are doing it throughout the pandemic, and we're going to hear the congressman's remarks in just a moment. But do you feel that there is real momentum for this?
Yeah, it certainly seems like the incredibly tumultuous period in the economy that we're experiencing right now as a result of the coronavirus shutdowns, the lack of demand for certain services, things like that. It's causing people to kind of take a step back and realize how tenuous the economic reality is for a lot of Americans in what we call normal times, I suppose, and how something like a UBI or some other form of unconditional cash assistance can be a support that doesn't require people to jump through a million hoops to receive that basic floor on income. And we're seeing that playing out with unemployment programs and other things. And so, you know, it unfortunately, you don't want it to take a pandemic to get people to be thinking about the value of a simpler approach to supporting people. But it's certainly, you know, it's good that we're asking these questions now in this time of great trouble.
So let me play both of Congressman Morelli's comments about UBI in this program. So we're going to do Morelli 1 and then 2 here, Rob. We'll do Senator Gillibrand a little bit later because they've all talked about it on this program. But the interesting thing is when you listen to what Congressman Morelli said on April 3rd on Connections and then yesterday, it's quite a change. This first is what he said when I asked him about a universal basic income to help Americans during the pandemic. This is back on April 3rd.
The rebate program is really, in some ways, it is a one-time payment, but it is dwarfed by the benefits to the Paycheck Protection Program and the unemployment benefit enhancements, which we're really hopeful of keeping individuals and families with resources to get through this.
So again, what he's saying there on April 3rd is, yeah, UBI is really not on the table. We're looking at other ways. We're looking at the payroll protection plan. We're looking at other forms of loans and assistance. UBI, not especially. Now let's listen to what he said about a UBI just yesterday.
I think this is an interesting time. I mean, what you really know is that because of the extraordinary nature of it, there are things that we are doing that we should be learning from. And so I think it's interesting. I've had some concerns about the proposition of UBI. This crisis will allow us to really look at it and see whether or not it's something, at least in whole or in part, we should be thinking about as Americans. So, and look, I also am of the view, although I have obviously philosophical leanings on just about every subject, as new data comes in or as new information comes in, as new experiences come in, you ought to use those as a way to, inform your thinking on the subject. So I think the stimulus checks, I think we should consider another round of stimulus checks, whether it's $1,200 or more, and whether or not we ought to bring the income level down. I think those are all conversations to have. But people are struggling, and I think the federal government needs to continue to think about how we provide support for those families that are struggling. And frankly, Evan, what I've said in so many different forms is, if you think about it this way, that to the extent that you help people with the income side of their ledger, so you replace their paychecks, or we do enhancements to unemployment, or we do stimulus checks, it makes it less necessary for us to be going in and saying, okay, we need to give rent forgiveness or mortgage forgiveness, things that once you start in financial instruments, there are spin-off effects that you may not entirely understand, and you could have a significant impact. So if we focus on the income side and every family was essentially made whole, they can continue to pay the bills that they've paid, and you don't have to be on the expense side as much. So that's something that I've thought from the beginning was the way for us to proceed. I still think it's the way for us to proceed. And look, we'll, if this ends up being an experiment on universal basic income and it teaches us something and we end up thinking maybe that is the way to approach it, I think these are some interesting questions.
Big change. I'll start with Pete Nabosny. I mean, that shift, when you heard what he said yesterday, did it strike you as remarkable? It struck me as pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and I think the particular piece that he made, the point that he made around trying to kind of prop up different elements of the economy and some of the consequences of, you know, covering mortgages or rents or having eviction prevention efforts, things like that, that are all, you know, I think the goal for everyone throughout this this pandemic has been to try to keep as many things in place for people as possible. You don't want a spike in homelessness during a public health crisis. You want employees to be able to return to their jobs as soon as it's safe and they're able to do so. And giving people cash assistance, it really cuts through a lot of the really difficult trade-offs that people have to face when they may be worried about reopening their business. There were a number of small business owners that called in yesterday with questions on your show. There were, I know there's a ton of people who are really worried about the end of the eviction moratoriums and things like that. And getting cash into people's pockets helps individuals make decisions about what they need to spend their money on, and to the extent possible, kind of keeps us whole as a society while we're really struggling to get through this incredibly difficult period. And I'll just add one. I was looking at the Census Bureau has been collecting data on how people use that first round of stimulus checks, because I think one of the constant refrains you always hear when you talk about something like UBI is this this kind of frankly insulting sense that people are just going to spend the money on drugs and things like that. And the data is overwhelming that 80% of respondents reported using it on food, almost 80% using it on rent or mortgage. People are paying for basic needs, some clothing, personal care products, things like that. And among upper-income households, they did use it to pay down some debt. But people needed that money from that stimulus, and they continue to need that money. And I think the congressman's recognizing that through his comments yesterday, that what we did in April really helped stave off a catastrophe, and we need to add to that certainty by moving forward with more rounds of cash relief to people.
Pete, I literally got an email or a comment on Twitter yesterday from a listener who said that there's too many people blowing off fireworks every night, and if you give someone a UBI, they're just going to spend it more on things like fireworks, and we have to prevent that.
Well, certainly, as you know, I live in the city of Rochester, and my dog doesn't appreciate some of the fireworks that
they start every night in my neighborhood.
Night, but,
yep,
and you know that is yes, that's a whole other topic. But as far as the data, what's been collected and what's been reported, there hasn't been a surge in stimulus spending on fireworks. It's really going towards people's basic needs, and I'd suggest we need to kind of tackle our ongoing firework challenge, you know, some other way. But the vast majority of people are using this money to take care of themselves, their families, meet their basic needs, and again get through this incredibly difficult public health and economic crisis that we're facing.
One other point before I turn to Alex, Pete. I mean, I don't mean to be ungenerous, and I didn't mean to laugh there when I think about people taking UBI money and buying fireworks. I live in the city of Rochester. I'm more than familiar with the nightly fireworks shows. There was an afternoon this past week, and they started at 4:30 in the afternoon in my neighborhood. That was pretty early. It went to about 4 o'clock at night. So I get that. But the reason I sort of snickered, and it's not a good look for me, and I try not to do that, but really, if you know people are hurting, I understand there are some Americans who think, well, what are you going to do with a UBI? But most of the data that I understand, Pete, does support the conclusion you're drawing. And later in this program, we're going to talk about what Canada found from a decades-old study. But most of the data I've seen finds that if you just give people money, they will start with the things that they need to survive, to eat, to not get evicted, to not lose a business. Fair?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, there are fringe cases, and we like to pick at fringe cases and use them as indicative of an entire program. I mean, I think that often leads us to make some really bad public policy decisions when we're trying to really restrict use of certain programs and things like that. We often cause more harm than good. Every study, every bit of data collection that around these different forms of cash assistance programs, these stimulus checks, as we're learning more about the effect it had on, along with the unemployment insurance, you should say, it stemmed this, what would have been this catastrophic rise in child poverty, in economic dislocation, and homelessness. I'm worried we're headed towards that way if we don't do some more in the next month. Every bit of data shows that these things were critical at helping the vast majority of people. And, you know, we just have to accept when we're spending large amounts of money and we're trying to help as many people as possible that a few things are going to happen that we're not all comfortable with. But you can't make every bit of public policy a few fringe cases.
Alex Turner, why don't you tell us a little bit about the work that you do and why the subject of UBI is on your radar right now?
Sure. Thanks, Evan. Yeah, so I have been a part of the eviction prevention efforts that have been going on in Monroe County and especially in the city of Rochester, connected to our homeless services network. And there is this huge building up of arrears and folks not being able to pay their rents. And it's growing to be millions of dollars now in the city of Rochester. And I loved so much what Joe Morelli said, Representative Morelli said yesterday about this being on the income side of things, that if you make these families whole, that they're able to pay those arrears and you don't have to create as much of the kind of programs that I'm running, where we've got this emergency assistance that helps folks to catch up on rent, that if they were made whole by something like a universal basic income, they would be able to take care of those things themselves. And it would give them kind of that dignity and agency to make those decisions for themselves. And kind of the other side of it is, in addition to that dignity and agency that it gives to people, that it frees up people on the human services side of things to think about the folks who go into work at the Department of Human Services or the folks who work at agencies like Catholic Family Center, that we go into this work because we want to help people and we love people. And so often, especially at an agency like DHS or an emergency assistance agency, so much of our work ends up being gatekeeping, that especially at DHS, that there's making sure that people qualify for these kinds of basic needs, deciding who gets food, who gets housing based on a set of requirements. And it's really to be able to remove that gatekeeping and to have a universal basic income. And so all of those folks who went into this work to be able to help people could really focus on those efforts. And we wouldn't have to spend as much time and energy on that gatekeeping side of things. And all of the moral injury that comes from having to say no to somebody who really doesn't have a whole lot of other options.
So Alex, if you could, can you elaborate a little bit more about this bottleneck that you see maybe about to explode? I ask not looking for individual stories by name, but as I've shared with listeners in recent weeks here, we're hearing from businesses all over the city that, you know, they've been given a break in maybe rent deferment or half off rent, 25% off rent, something like that for several months now. And there's a whole lot of landlords, people on property saying, yeah, those breaks are ending. I need you to not only pay 100% of your monthly rent, but I need you to pay, you know, the deferred payments. And they're telling that, I say this every time, but I'm going to keep putting this caveat in. I'm not saying this to bash property owners or landlords because I know they've got mortgages to pay and it's a hard moment here. But they're saying that to people who are out of work or massively reduced with incomes, business owners who are really sort of restricted and constricted in what they can earn. So it looks like from my perspective, we are looking at a possible explosion of rent failures, mortgage failures, and that could have a cascading effect. Tell me a little bit more about the kinds of stories and the kinds of experiences that you are dealing with in your work.
Sure, absolutely. So we've been seeing an increasing volume of calls, and we're also seeing that at places like 2-on-1 and places that take these kind of crisis calls, that more and more people are calling about these arrears. Now, New York State has been extremely progressive in the way that they have created eviction protection for tenants. And I think that you make a good point here that we definitely don't want to demonize our landlords, that the landlords that are acting in good faith here are really in a tight bind. That, and what we're seeing, and all the data is showing, that there is a growing number of arrears. Now, I don't know exactly how many households are behind in Rochester. We just don't have the data to show it.
Sure.
But places like Urban Footprint are starting to look at how many households that were rent burdened before the crisis are now out of work. And it's somewhere between 10 and 20,000 households within the city of Rochester that were out of work. Now, some of them will receive those expanded unemployment benefits, but those expire at the end of the month. And they're projecting a rent burden each month in the several millions of dollars that is not getting covered by income. And so there's really a lot of that pressure that's building, and it's been building. We've also seen some landlord surveys. Now, these may not necessarily be representative because the landlords that were surveyed tend to serve a lower income population, but as much as half of those tenants were a month or more behind. So there's really a lot of households that are really struggling. Now, the Safe Harbor Act that was passed recently has expansive protections for the tenants. And so from March 7th on, that rent can't be used in a warrant of eviction. So that's an incredibly big protection for tenants. But what that ends up doing is it creates this debt is still there for landlords. And now we could create I loved what Joe Morelli said about how we could create all sorts of financial instruments that would be able to help landlords and tenants kind of resolve those debts. But if you make those households whole, it's an extremely equitable way to resolve kind of that rent burden that's building up.
Talking to Pete Nabosny and Alex Turner for their perspectives on a universal basic income. Pete is the Director of Policy for the Children's Agenda. Alex is a Community Resource Services Program Director at Catholic Family Center and an Eviction Prevention Representative to the Homeless Services Network. The reason we're talking about UBI, a universal basic income, is because Congressman Joe Morelli on this program yesterday all but endorsed it. I mean, he didn't come right out and say, I'll vote for it tomorrow. But his remarks were significant because he says he's been listening and he thinks that with new information, members of Congress should stake out new positions. And knowing that there's no perfect solution to a pandemic relief program, maybe this is a chance to learn about UBI, which has been talked about a lot, but not done very much. It has been done a little bit. And again, we'll get to that a little bit later in the program. But it does look like there's more openness on behalf of elected representatives to a UBI. So, listeners, most Americans got $1,200 one time, $500 per child. What do you make of a UBI? You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. You can call us, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Now, certainly, members of Congress have very different positions. I want to listen to what Senator Kirsten Gillibrand said about a UBI on this program last month, starting with my question for her about it. Why not just give people cash at this point? Why continue to try to earmark assistance in so many ways?
Well, if you just did the straight up $1,000 a month, for most people, that's not enough to pay their rent or their mortgage or their food bill for a month. I spend about that amount of money in food in a month. So asking Americans to survive on that, it's not enough, number one. Number two, not every American needs $1,000 a month. There's plenty of people who are still working, who can afford their bills. There's plenty of very wealthy people who obviously can afford everything. They don't need it. So you want to have it more targeted. But I'm not against unemployment insurance. And one of those solutions that I think would be even more elegant than just $1,000 per adult is paid leave, because everybody wants to stay employed. Anybody who has a job wants to keep that job. They want to keep their health insurance that they have as part of that employment. But businesses are closed. So imagine if every worker in the country had paid leave, they could take up to 3 months off, be fully paid during that 3 months, keep their health insurance, and it wouldn't touch the business at all. That would have made a huge difference if we had it for these last few months, and you could augment it to 6 months if needed. And that would have been a better solution, because everyone could have kept in their existing job and get a percentage of their income to take home every week to stay solvent and stay afloat. And that, I think, would have been a better solution.
That's Senator Gillibrand making the case against UBI on Connections last month. Pete Nabosny, what do you make of those remarks?
Well, so, I mean, I think there's a couple things in there. The senator is an enormous champion for many issues that, you know, that I'm supportive of, the Children's Agenda has supported. Paid leave is an incredibly important thing for us to enact nationally, and I hope that this crisis kind of helps open some eyes about that issue as well. And I think she's absolutely right that around things like unemployment insurance, you know, a UBI or some kind of universal assistance does not solve every problem, and there's still differential need that folks have based on their particular circumstances. But I think one of the challenges that we're facing as a policy response to this current crisis is how sort of limited the information that the government has in terms of identifying who is most in need. For example, those stimulus checks were sent out based on income levels. Initially, the people had from when they filed their 2018 taxes, and then maybe it got updated when they filed their 2019 taxes because of the timing and things like that. Well, someone's financial situation could have changed tremendously, certainly from the end of 2018 to today, but even from the end of 2019 today, because we're in this, like, mostly unprecedented, again, public health and economic crisis. So there were individuals whose income dropped significantly who didn't receive a stimulus check because we weren't trying to do it universally. Similarly, I think, you know, there's an astonishing share of unemployment claims have been submitted from our region. About 27% of all the jobs held prior to the pandemic have had some kind of unemployment program initial claim made. That's not 27% of people, because people could have applied multiple times, but we know that there are people that are being left out of that, people who have seen their wages reduced over this crisis, but they haven't been laid off. There's folks who have still had trouble navigating these systems, and there are people who are uneligible or have trouble getting unemployment for various reasons. So a simpler way to do it is to have those other programs, but then also just recognize that we need to be putting some floor on income out there for folks. And then you can, you know, there's nothing about a UBI that says it's not that you can't make a taxable income. You can't treat it at some income point where you're going to claw some of it back eventually. But the idea is to get it out the door and then get the help to people so that it's circulating the economy and we're addressing the broad needs that people have, rather than trying too much to target every particular person's situation and resulting in leaving quite a few people falling through the cracks.
Yeah, I thought there was something a little out of touch about her comments about food. I mean, she's not talking about herself, by the way, listeners. She's talking about, she and her husband have two kids, and she says she spends more than $1,000 a month on food. I'm not saying that's not legit. I mean, families spend quite a lot on food. They have to. But if you're living in poverty, $1,000 a month goes a hell of a long way to feeding a family of four very carefully on food, along with a possible rent that, you know, I mean, that maybe Alex Turner can speak more to this. Did that strike you as a little out of touch?
It did seem like it's not in line with the budgets that we see when folks come through here. We take a look at folks' budgets when they come to us asking for assistance. And frequently, if folks are on Social Security income, they may not be supporting a family of four, but that might be all of their income for the month. And so they're finding ways to make ends meet. So it's definitely not quite the experience of the folks who come through our offices. And I think to the point that she said about targeting, that kind of targeting, it requires, there's folks that need to do that work to do the targeting. And you hear about the unemployment insurance and how backed up the phone lines have been and the applications have been for unemployment services, that there's folks at the Department of Labor that have to do that targeting and have to process those applications. And that's true also of our agency. And I believe that there's lots of value in the interactions that folks have with our case managers, and we provide lots of other referrals that help them to meet other needs. But at the end of the day, the need in our community really is enormous. And it may be that there's an opportunity for us to provide, at least during this kind of unique situation, a less targeted approach that might meet some of those needs and let less people get left out, and they don't have to wait weeks like they do when they're making these unemployment claims.
So let me address what listeners are asking about. Gabe on Twitter says, I'm a proponent for UBI, but would you receive UBI in addition to your hourly or salary wage and or unemployment benefits? Gabe, the answer that I gave Gabe was generally yes, but every program could be tailored with exceptions. Just look at the $1,200 that most Americans got earlier this year. That's an example. So there can always be exceptions. And the senator is Senator Gillibrand voicing her concern that not everyone needs it. So maybe Congress would design it with exceptions. Linda in Penfield writes in to ask, how would people qualify for UBI? Would it be on a sliding scale based on existing income? I don't think a seven-figure CEO needs the assistance as someone out of work and their rent is overdue. That's from Linda. I mean, Pete, I don't think anybody disagrees with that. Could you design a program that is elegant enough with carve-outs to be careful as not to have unintended consequences? Do you prefer the X amount for everyone? You know, if you're designing the policy and you're in the room with Congress right now, how are you doing it?
Yeah, so I respond to a couple of things there. One, one of the concerns that's starting to bubble up, which, to be honest, I think is overstated, although it did come up on your show yesterday, is this idea that the $600 sort of top off on top of the regular unemployment insurance is creating a disincentive to work, and I think there is a legitimate issue there in which we have essential workers who have been putting themselves at the front lines of this and putting themselves at considerable risk to take care of others throughout this period, whether they're working a grocery store or a hospital or a child care program, are receiving less income because they are employed right now in many cases than those folks who were let go and are getting that sort of bonus unemployment insurance. But there's also the reality that there's really reduced demand for employees right now, so you don't have this surge of new hirings that we're seeing in the economy yet. But people have raised that as a concern because the $600 is tied to unemployment. So if you put something in like a universal basic income that isn't tied to your employment, you're removing that, what people are identifying as that incentive against work. You're saying you get this whether you're working or not. And so that helps folks who've been put out of work, but it also helps people who have, for whatever reason, maybe they're reduced hours, maybe they're their earnings are down because they work in a tipped field where they're not the same level of business isn't happening right now. So it's helping a lot of people as opposed to kind of creating some of these other situations. To the person with the seven-figure salary question, I think, you can certainly, I mean, the idea of universal is universal, right? But you can set some conditions on it. The idea that I favor, and I was saying earlier, is don't complicate things up front by determining who gets the money based on some past earnings or proof of income. You know, folks who go to DHS have to jump through a tremendous amount of hoops in terms of proving their assets and their earnings and pay stubs and generating a lot of material so that they can be reviewed for these, like this means testing program. I would suggest do it on the other end. So get the money out the door, and then if there's a need to tax some of that, you know, low-income people are typically not paying much in income taxes. But if someone is making $500,000, $1 million a year, and they're getting $12,000 a year in UBI, they're not going to notice that too much. And you could kind of tax that on the other end while retaining that elegance that you were talking about, Evan, in terms of the delivery and the enrollment of the program.
All right, Alex, what about how much and who gets it?
I think that Pete really addressed that really well, that at the end of the day, it's really about the whole benefit to this program, if you were to do this, is that it removes all the complications that come with a targeted program like a DHS or unemployment, that all of the complication on the front end to qualify for that kind of assistance. What UBI does is it removes it. It removes all that complication. And so rather than, like Pete was saying, to rather than having someone go through all of these hoops, which can sometimes be traumatic depending on what kind of lines they're waiting in, how many days they have to spend at appointments to make sure that they can stay qualified for these basic needs assistance. I mean, to be able to remove those barriers so that folks can simply have this basic needs assistance. And like you said, all the data shows that people do spend it on that. So if you remove those barriers, then however you design, and this is where I'm not an economist, I don't know how to design how you pay for this UBI assistance. But I think that Pete makes a great point that it can get paid for on the other side. And so somebody who's making $1 million a year is going to pay that back in taxes, income taxes.
Well, let me take our only break of the hour. We've got a lot of questions to answer from listeners. If you're on the phone, we'll get to you. Assemblyman Mark Johns has called in. We'll bring him in after our only break, and we'll tell you what we know about historical UBI as well. A universal basic income, all but endorsed by Congressman Joe Morelli on this program yesterday, saying that as we look at a lot of different problems coming our way, this might be the simplest and most direct way to help people instead of trying to route it through a lot of different forms. Maybe just giving people money and letting them pay their bills directly is the best way to do it. We'll talk about it more with Pete Nabosny and Alex Turner on the other side of this break with your phone calls and emails as well. I'm Evan Dawson. Friday on The Next Connections, we welcome Dr. Michael Mendoza, Monroe County Public Health Commissioner, to the program. We're going to talk about the state of the pandemic in Monroe County, how he sees the rate of infection, what's happening, public behavior in response to this challenge, and more. He'll take your questions, and we'll try to look ahead as we talk about planning for what this community needs to do going forward with Dr. Mendoza Friday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Assemblyman Mark Johns on the phone first with us. Mr. Assemblyman, always nice to talk to you. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, Evan.
Yes, sir.
Look, I've been talking about this since even before Andrew Yang brought it up. I think he's the guy
he stole it from you. I know he did, Mark.
Well, you know what? And I stole it from a guy named Milton Friedman. You remember him?
I do.
It's before your time. I don't know if you guys were around, but Milton Friedman is a conservative economist. And he was one of Reagan's guys, right? That's how far this goes back. And it is basically very similar to the earned income tax credit. If you're working and you're the working poor, why do we want to punish you? Number one, you should be able to, if you're low wages, it should be income tax free. And number two, let's give somebody $1,000 a month and scale it back if they make more money. But people know what to do with it. Food, clothing, shelter, pay your rent, pay your mortgage. You certainly don't want to lose your house. I don't think they're going to spend it all on fireworks. You know, those are crazy people, but the world's going to be full of them now and then. But the fact is, people know what to do. If you give them money, somehow they know what to do with it. And here's the other thing. I didn't hear the whole beginning of your show, but we spend tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars a year administering a welfare program. You pay for all the people that are in the bureaucracy. You pay for their health care. You pay for their pensions. You pay their salaries. I think it's less than a two-thirds, something like that. 25% to a third go for the bureaucracy. Why not just take the money and give it directly to the people? And people know what to do with it. You give them money, they know how to spend it, and give it to them on a monthly basis. You give people up front $12,000, you know what? It's not going to be there in 12 months. But if you give them $1,000 a month, scale it back as their income goes up. For every $2 they make, you take back a dollar. Guess what? You got a workfare system. And conservatives like Ronald Reagan and Milton Friedman, I mean, didn't Milton Friedman win a lot of various different prizes? I forgot, maybe Nobel Prize. I'm not sure what all he's won, but he wrote a lot of textbooks for colleges, universities, and I think high school.
Well, Mr. Semyman, let me read an email from a listener. Charles says, let me be clear. The only situation in which I will consider money for nothing to be a good thing is if dire straits is involved. If you want money, then go to work and get it. Also, he says, hold on, Mark. Let me finish his email and you can respond to all of it. He says, Joe Morelli thinks UBI is a good idea. Okay, does he still think it's a good idea when he finds out that I want to use it to buy a new rifle? I'm thinking when he gets wind of that, suddenly there will be strings attached. What do you say to that, Mark Johnson?
Well, first of all, I'm talking about workfare. If you don't work, you get nothing. But if you work, let's help out the working poor. They are the backbone of this country. We don't want to give people something for nothing. But I'm talking about people that are making 10, 15, 20 bucks an hour, 20, 30, maybe up to 40,000 a year. Let's help them out. They know what to do with the money. If you're not working, you get nothing. But everybody fills out an income tax form every year. And if it's low, the following year, we're going to give you $1,000 a month until you do the next income tax form. So hopefully this won't penalize people. You're going to want to move up. I mean, nobody's going to turn down a $50,000 a year raise. But the fact is that if, you know, you're just getting incremental raises, you're a working class, working poor, but you're working. The essential industries are basically there are people out there working on farms, you know, picking the crops, loading up the trucks, driving the trucks, food production, slaughterhouses. These aren't high-paying jobs working in stores, but let's subsidize those folks that are working. I'm not talking about a welfare program. Andrew Yang was on the Financial News Network saying this is better than welfare. It should be taking the place of welfare. We need people to go out and work, and let's reward work. If you want to punish laziness, fine, but let's reward work because there's a lot of working poor that are really struggling. Let's help them out as long as they're working.
Mr. Semyman, always nice. Thank you for making the time to call the program. That's Semyman Mark Johns. Let me turn it over to Pete and Alex. And Pete, first, I mean, I can't speak for Congressman Morelli, but my thought for Charles would be if the law says you can buy as many rifles as you want, spend the money where you want if there's a UBI. I mean, I didn't hear Joe Morelli on this program saying you can have a UBI only if you spend it where he wants you to spend it.
Yeah, and I think that's the key point is the challenge that a lot of these programs face is that, and that it frustrates a lot of people and causes all this bureaucratic red tape that people are talking about is because we often try to restrict the use of funds. I think the point of something like a UBI is that it's trusting that people can identify what their needs are. You know, if your need is let's say some kind of recreational activity, whether you know buying a new rifle is qualifies into that, then that's up to you to decide that. If you want to buy, you know, some people are going to buy a video game system, or they're going to buy a basketball hoop or something like that. People do need recreation in the society, and I think we shouldn't discount that. But again, the data shows it's been collected that the vast majority of people use this money to meet their basic needs, and because people have basic needs that need to be met, and we are through our existing set of various public assistance programs, we kind of parse things out so in so many difficult ways that a family may have just enough cash assistance to pay for these toiletries, but then their food budget isn't quite covered, and so you know there's a million ways that people have to manage these different pots of funds, and again, I don't think you can get rid of all those and replace them simply with a UBI, but there are ways to take a look at the mix of how people receive support. And just to the point around sort of the conversation around welfare benefits and people not working and not wanting to work and all that, there is a astonishingly small number of people in this community who are receiving what was commonly referred to as welfare, temporary assistance. And in normal times, they open about 500 cases a month in Monroe County, and that's for you know, a county with, what, 700,000 people. It's just, it's overstated in terms of in the public imagination, how many people are, you know, sort of receiving these welfare payments. The vast majority of people are trying to, one way or another, bring in money for their family, earn money. And if they're not in the workforce, it's often because they're unemployed. They may be a student. They may be caring for somebody who's, you know, a family member who needs, whether it's they have a very young child or they have an elderly parent who needs ongoing care. Sometimes they're disabled and unable to work themselves. I mean, that's the vast majority of the people who are out of work in our community. And most other people are trying one way or another to provide for themselves and their families. And so I think the conversation around welfare and people being on the dole and things like that is really out of sync with the reality of how people in this community are living and struggling and trying to get by.
Well, and earlier this week, Professor David Kunch, a business professor, was on this program. He said late in the program that UBI had been tried in Canada and it was a disaster. And he sent me an article by the BBC analyzing that program. I actually want to go ahead and just read a few points from the article because, interestingly enough, the article doesn't I could be totally misreading this, Professor Kunch, but what you sent me indicates that the program not only was not a disaster, but it worked. It was jokingly referred to as Mincum in Dauphin, Manitoba. Population about 10,000 people, and the program was to give an average family there $16,000 a year. Now this is four decades ago, so you know we're talking a family of four was getting, I don't know, 20 to 25K. I'm trying to adjust for inflation, but maybe more, maybe double that, maybe it's $30,000. But the point is, what happened? Did it drive people to not want to work? Well, according to the BBC, the experiment found that basic income does not appear to discourage recipients from working, one of the major concerns politicians have always held about such schemes. And no, so you did not have fewer people who wanted to work. You did have a significant decline in hospitalizations, 8.5% decline in hospitalizations, primarily because there were fewer alcohol-related accidents and hospitalizations due to mental health issues, also a reduction in visits to family physicians, and an overall increase in the quality of health throughout the time that there was a universal basic income. So among other results, I mean, basically every metric I could see, Pete Nabosny, was positive. But I'm not trying to stack this. I'm just trying to understand what happened. Maybe I'm missing it. I'll ask the professor to follow up with me.
Yeah.
What am I missing?
Yeah, no, I think you covered the main points of it. The one area from the research I've read on it was that there was a small reduction in employment among two groups of people. One were teenagers who were not, it was a farm community, right? So a lot of people would drop out of high school and go to work before completing their high school diploma. And the institution of this program really changed that. So it increased high school graduation, which, you know, I think that's a good trade-off for delaying entering the workforce for a bit. But, you know, those folks who are focused entirely on workforce participation, you would see a small drop there. And then the other area was among new moms staying home longer with their children prior to returning to the workforce, which, you know, again, most of the research out there, you know, I work at the Children's Agenda, shows that there's an incredible value of
people who were
bonding with their children.
So the people who were discouraged from working because of a UBI were new moms and high school students who then went on to actually graduate.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I think there's a valid yes. So again, I think the vast majority of your listeners would agree that those were two, warranted reductions in workforce participation. Right. I'd hope so. I certainly think so. Now I think the criticism that I wasn't able to listen to your show the other day, but that that professor has raised, and I think it's in a lot of the dialogue around this, is around the cost. Right. So we're seeing some really positive effects in terms of well-being, mental health improvements, reduced hospitalizations, people feeling more economic security. But, you know, it comes at a cost of we're going to say we're going to provide a vast amount of money to a broad range of people. And it's to everyone's, you know, we can all sort of disagree what's the cost benefit of each of these things and how much we want to be targeted and how much we want to you know, provide some universality of program access to help everyone, recognizing that not everyone's going to need it and that some people may spend it in a way that other people disagree with. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that we have to deal with as a society. But most of the research, you know, whether it was that program in Canada or there was a program in Finland, there's some interesting stuff coming out of Stockton, California, where they've had a basic income program going for about 2 years now. It shows that, again, whether you think you can pay for it at scale, there's this broadly seen benefit in terms of household stability, decreasing family stress, improving the functioning of people in that family, and that's pretty broadly seen. Now, whether you think the trade-off is worth it, that's a debate we can have. But the value of providing cash assistance to people, I think, is pretty clear that it does help help families and help individuals.
Alex Turner, briefly, could you respond to Charles's email? Because I know you work with people who are really hurting. He says if people want money, they shouldn't ask the government. They should go out and get a job.
Yeah, I think it's just not something that we see that folks really just want to receive money and not work. People appreciate the opportunity to be independent. And that's something that we see over and over again. And oftentimes when folks come to us, it's because they've had a health crisis or the vehicle that they use to get to work has broken down. There's crises that cause people to come into programs like ours to get assistance. And that's the same thing that's true of DHS. And that's the same thing that's true of things like Social Security disability, that almost everyone that we speak to, that there is a desire and a will to be independent. And I kind of want to challenge the assumption about money for nothing, that oftentimes, and he mentioned it, but oftentimes folks that are getting these supports, they're giving care. The new mothers that are caring for a baby, the family members that are caring for an elderly relative, these are services that cost our society a whole lot of money when we have an institution do it. But when a family member is doing it, that's a huge benefit to our society, both in the quality of care and in the cost to our society.
All right, let's try to squeeze in a ton more here in the last few minutes, so we'll try to move fast here. Pete Nabosny, briefly, a listener wants to know, if a UBI is passed in this country, will we see employers lower wages or salaries as a result?
So I think that's why you also would have things like minimum wage and things like that in this country. But some of the findings around earned income tax credit that has been briefly spoken about is there are challenges when you put additional funds, you know, salary subsidies into the market, and which can do things like either induce more employment or reduce it. But most of what I've kind of seen is that it actually sort of improves the relative bargaining power of workers, in that they, you know, they are not completely destitute if this job falls through, or if the wages aren't sufficient and things like that. So I think we'd need a lot more research into that kind of thing and to see sort of what's been happening elsewhere. But I don't think that would be sort of an immediate effect of the implementation of a UBI.
Okay. Rich, keep it tight. Go ahead, Rich.
Real quick. Hi, Evan. Number one, would this drive inflation, and just a little pushback on the person who says not giving up people unemployed the money? Full employment in this country is considered 4%, and that would be like 12, 15 million people if you just look at that. You don't punish people because they can't find a job. That's just two things. And do you think this would drive inflation at all as far as more money being out there?
Yeah, Rich, it's a great question. Pete, concerned about inflation?
Yeah, I think that's something that smarter people than me would need to really tackle. I mean, there are ways to, obviously through interest rates, through taxation, things like that, to handle inflation. And I think that's something that the implementation of any kind of program at scale would have to really grapple with, because you wouldn't want to see the value of that, you know, $1,000 a month swallowed up by rising costs to families.
Okay. Graham, I know it's late. We got to keep it tight, but please go ahead.
Thanks, Evan. I'll keep it quick. My comment is actually on inflation, and it's that, you know, right now almost everything that a UBI would be spent on by the majority of people, like food, housing, clothing, transportation, et cetera, are provided exclusively through the private market for profit. And as such, if there's a huge injection of money into people that are purchasing these things, it just makes sense for businesses to raise their prices and cause inflation. That's why I think if we're going to introduce a UBI, we also need to do it alongside what are called universal basic services. This is basically that we have publicly owned and provided options for all the basic needs people have, like food, housing, healthcare, and transportation. People that receive a UBI can spend their income on these basic services, which will only charge for the cost of providing the actual services and don't take a profit. And through this, inflation will be controlled as for-profit corporations are forced to keep their prices at similar levels to these publicly provided goods and services. I wonder what the...
Graham, thank you. That complex set of problems. Alex, what do you make of that?
Absolutely. It's really a complicated thing, and that's where I lean on Pete's answer, that smarter folks than me have to answer those questions about inflation and the macroeconomics of this. But I think the basic sense of it to give people a floor they can't fall beneath is a good thing to lean on.
Okay, Pete, 20 seconds. Do you agree with Graham that you can't just do a UBI? You might need some other structural change?
Well, certainly I think you need to think about other, you know, structures to tackle some of this. I do think that there is some, you know, it's really difficult. I'm sorry. That's a tough 20-second answer, but more conversations needed to figure out how best to implement these.
Sure, and I, you know, we'll welcome people who are economists, and I hope to continue conversations with lawmakers. But really, we've come a long way, Pete, from our first conversation about UBI. Haven't we?
Yeah, it's been a big 4 years, I think.
Pete Nabosny is Director of Policy for the Children's Agenda. You are always generous with your time, and we appreciate the expertise. Thank you, Pete.
Thanks for having me.
And I really want to thank Alex Turner for making it work today with the schedule, a Community Resource Services Program Director at Catholic Family Center and Eviction and Prevention Representative to the Homeless Services Network. Really important work in this community. Alex, thanks. Welcome. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. Thanks for letting me on.
You got it. Also, thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, the producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a nice afternoon. Talk with you tomorrow.